This is the 222 Paranormal Podcast with your hosts, Jen and Joe. And this is the second half of our discussion with some fantastic people from Paramericon 2017. Okay, so we have another exciting guest with us today. It's Mike, and we tried to get a hold of him earlier, but he has been so busy. His booth has just been swamped with people all day, so finally wrangled him, and he's here.
Welcome, Mike, and his t-shirt says, The Paranormal Man.
Yes, that's better. You see, I started the Paranormal Man organization to scientifically investigate things that go on, or bump in the night, as you would. And as it progressed, when I would show up to places and even to do a lecture, here comes the paranormal man. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying, I'm not the paranormal man. I am the director of the organization, the paranormal man, which is, you know, it's like Superman is Superman, but you could duplicate him with 12 men. Uh-huh. It's that type of situation. Of course, I do include women. I got to add that. So, you know, that's really what it's all about. But that totally changed here at this event because I really was the paranormal man.
Yeah.
Because I was the only man.
Yep.
In the vending room.
Yeah. And that's, when we were talking about the event, when we first signed up for the event, we were like, all right, it's going to be a paranormal, you know, gathering of everybody. And she's like, it's where women shine. And I'm like, oh. And then she's like, no, don't worry. You're not the only man here.
Yes.
Which isn't a bad thing. Joe's single. We got to find him.
Yeah. I'm single, too.
Hey, there we go. Matchmaker. Now, matchmaker for you guys.
Let me tell you, here I go. My most famous thing is stories.
Love it.
I'm full of stories. I'm doing an investigation, an ongoing investigation, and actually writing a book on, we won't call it a cold case murder. We have to call this a frozen case murder.
Okay.
Because we're talking about 160 to 200 years ago.
Oh.
Wow.
And unfortunately, it involves people who were not, let's say, in the public eye anyway. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Quakers. Okay. Who are very secretive in themselves.
Okay.
And even more so, this particular group of Quakers also was involved with the Underground Railroad.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And oddly enough, I found more information about them through the Underground Railroad than I did through the regular means.
Wow. It takes a lot to investigate that stuff, though. You know,
I've
you have to do a lot
on
of
it
digging.
For going on 8 years now.
Wow.
And it involves two urban legends about two girls that lived in a house back in the 1850s.
Where at?
It's in Darlington, Maryland.
Okay.
Okay.
And it's an interesting thing. And I'm surprised even people who live in the area weren't aware of this. But the name Darlington is a German word. And its translation to English is Quaker.
Oh.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
We got bells on that
one. Yeah.
That's a bit of trivia you can play somewhere.
Yeah.
Cool. So when you were researching this, so you're talking about 150 years ago, you said?
Yes.
How what type of documentation or evidence did you find that is that old?
Well, here's the interesting thing. None of the documentation is available. I've found out more recently that there is a written document on the incidents, but they were kept by an individual in the Friends Church back in the 1800s.
Oh.
Where it is now, I have no idea.
Oh, no.
Or even how to find it. And, you know, what we have left, you know, we have the, where's my brain now?
It's okay, it's been a long day.
Yeah, it's been a long day. I can picture them in my mind, the people with the carriages that run slow down the road.
Oh, the Amish?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I'm good at that kind of trivia. You know, we can play charades real good. The Amish people are close to Quaker, but when it comes to this type of information about dead and what have you from the past, it's taboo. They don't talk about it.
Okay.
And of course the Quakers didn't either. But even to tell you information, it's very, very hush-hush.
Okay.
And although I've been working on this a long, long time, some interesting factors about this particular case is that the great-grandfather of the girl who was first killed. Now, as far as the urban legend, it says she hung herself.
Okay.
Now, number one, that's a fallacy in itself. Quakers never hang themselves.
Okay.
Okay. It's totally taboo to do that. Now, she was hung. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Okay.
But she was murdered.
Oh, my goodness.
And the name of the person I'm still trying to gather, and the whole story of what he did, because as the urban legend goes, it says that the woman hung herself in the cupola of their mansion, and the maid went there and found her, and in running downstairs to find the owner of the house to tell him what his daughter had done, she tripped and fell at the top of the stairs and broke her neck.
Oh, that sounds suspicious.
Yes. Especially since if you start analyzing the whole situation forensically.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the third floor was for children and servants. The staircase for the servants is totally different than the staircase for the household.
Right.
Staircase for the household is very wide, good 8 to 10 feet wide, and usually carpeted too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The servant staircase is a very narrow and just plain wood staircase.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from the basement, well actually from the first floor to the third. The household only goes to the first and second floors.
Okay.
Now, if this person seen an incident such as a person hung, and even if they panicked, and they ran from the third floor to the first floor to go tell the owner of the property, hey, your daughter's hung upstairs. By forensically analyzing the situation of the panic, first of all, in a panic, your reactions become automatic.
Mm-hmm.
You will do what you're used to doing. Therefore, the woman would not have changed staircases on the second floor and come out of one staircase, walked over to another staircase,
right,
and then proceeded down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, when she was found, the position she was found was that her head was down a lower step and her body and feet were up at a higher step. And falling that way is very unlikely to trip. And even further, the stairs was almost trip-proof,
okay.
You know. So it's unlikely that a person would have fell down a flight of stairs that normally no one would fall down, even a child, and be found in the opposite direction she should be. Now, through my investigation, putting things together, there's a lot of paranormal activity on the landing above the household staircase. Very much so. And there seems to be something or someone who doesn't want a lot to be known about that landing.
Okay.
One investigation I done there, I placed an infrared camera on the doorway to the staircase going to the third floor. Lo and behold, at about 4:30 in the morning, the camera was moved away from the staircase.
Oh, man.
Over to the doorway to another room. And if you looked at the recording, you'd say, okay, it's on that staircase. And you look at the end of the recording, it's on another doorway. But at first glance, you wouldn't picture, because both doorways look alike.
Okay.
But what gave it away was by between 4:30 and 5:30 in the morning, sun started to come up. And light was coming in through the window in the second room. Now, I took this film and I ran it 12 times normal speed. And here's the interesting thing. If you looked at the movement of the camera, because it's evident 12 times normal speed,
okay.
but not in normal speed.
Oh, okay.
Wow. You couldn't even see it move.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At 12 times normal speed, it's moving like a second hand of a clock. And this is a lockdown camera on a tripod.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It should have not have been able to move. And if it were forced, you could see it jerking or whatever.
Sure.
There was no jerking whatsoever.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, even going back to some of those movies where you see, you know, well, this takes an hour to move. Yeah, it does.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It really does. And here was an actual recording of it happening where they moved the camera so I couldn't record who was coming down the stairs.
Yeah.
Wow. Intelligent haunting.
Yes.
Very intelligent.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And a lot happens there all the time. The Paranormal Man organization, we use that one building.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a little mansion.
Yeah.
It's on an old farm, which is now actually a campground called Ramblewood Campground.
So. Okay.
And we use that as our test norm.
Mm-hmm.
When we have a procedure to test or we want to test out to see if this can happen or this can happen or that can happen, that's where we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we log the results. And then we take it out someplace else and try it and compare the results.
Okay.
And then as a third step, we give it to someone completely different to try it on their own.
Yeah.
And see what results they get.
That's interesting.
And if the results is consistent all the way through, then that proves that this actually works.
Wow. Yeah.
That's cool.
So we've been able to weed out. I mean, there's a lot of things people do in investigations that make no difference whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You can just leave them out. You know, I make this statement all the time. I say, I can walk to California.
Yeah.
But I would truly love to take the plane.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So if there are steps that make no difference, I'm going to leave them out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, I got to say this. It's something I preach all the time. These entities are spirits. They are souls of people. And you should treat them as you would want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And they will treat you precisely as you treat them. If you're nasty to them, they can be nasty to you.
Yep.
Even if they're not nasty people.
Right.
But if you know, you bug a person, they might snap at you. Same goes with a spirit. So, you know, don't make them do parlor tricks. Please out there, don't
yes.
make them do parlor.
Yeah.
None of that, can you turn this light on? Leave that home somewhere. And remember, don't give yourself away as an amateur. Walk in a room and say, is there anybody here? Yes, you're here.
Yeah.
You know, don't right. say that. That's a big giveaway.
Yeah.
You know, go there with a purpose. Go there with a reason. Go there with, how you doing tonight? I came here to chat. Do you have something to say? That way.
Mm-hmm.
Go with it. Investigate something a little bit. Case in point, a group invited me at this same place, as a matter of fact, to just walk through with them. And they were in a basement asking questions. Now, I had just found out they had gotten out of one of the attic rooms this old, old, old wall mirror.
Oh, my gosh.
And what's interesting is it's an old lead mirror.
Oh.
And lead mirrors are just like photographic plates. If a certain type of light is beat on the lead long enough,
mm-hmm.
it will leave an imprint. So you will get actually a picture.
So cool.
Mm-hmm.
So cool.
And what I was able to deduce from this picture was opposite of it at one time, there was a spinet piano.
Really?
Yes, with a little stool.
Oh my gosh.
So when he asked me to ask the question, mm-hmm. first thing I said was, are you the one that plays that lovely spinet piano upstairs? See how I asked that question?
Yeah.
Specific.
Very specific. And they were recording, which we weren't hearing anything, because at the time they were doing this, the RT unit wasn't developed. And they were using a K2 meter to check response.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now here's the interesting thing. Every time they asked a question, if they got an answer at all to their question, it would light two or three lights. You know, blah, 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 blah. When I asked a question, about the spinet piano. Are you the one who plays that lovely spinet piano upstairs? Every light lit, solid.
Wow.
Now, here's how I go into do things scientifically. I did not ask a second question. Mm-hmm. I gave it to the next person to ask. You asked your question. So again, it went back to two or three lights. Mm-hmm. Then when it came around to me again, I said, that piano really has good sound, don't it? Again, every light lit solid. So that's the type of questions you really should be asking mm-hmm. when you're out there. Do a little bit of research on the place. You don't have to know a lot. Just something to start a conversation. One item can start a conversation.
Yeah. Something that they're familiar with that maybe they miss.
Right.
And would love, you know, just like if you're talking to anybody, like hey, Jen.
Right.
How, you know, how's your book sales going? I'd be like, oh, I sold one book today at the show. One sticker, one show we sold.
There you go.
Instead of saying, you know, you know. I'm glad you guys are here.
Yeah. on the same note, I have a recording of an investigation I did there where I invited people from, I'll say, I have a meetup group also, and these are your regular investigators, you know, your armchair specialists. And there was two people there who talked their whole hour they were in the room, which never gives anybody else a chance to talk.
Right. Exactly.
So that's rule number one they broke.
Yeah.
Rule number two, the one was talking to the other about their job, and someone on their job seen them doing something and told on them, so they don't like that person. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know why they would talk about that like that. This was the hour-long conversation about the job and the other person whom they didn't like. Now, I go really good into EVPs, and I've determined a lot. I give several different lectures on the different frequencies they talk on. Well, I got a unusual sound come across the audio, and I start filtering and filtering. And finally, I filtered it out completely where I could hear what it said. And the statement was, I wonder if we could get them to come up here to us.
They want that negative energy.
Precisely.
Yep.
That was the thing.
Uh-huh.
And they were on a totally different frequency from the people who normally speak as spirit. These weren't spirits.
Yeah.
These were demonics.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, oh boy, we got some people here that can send us some help.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell people, that's not what you talk about.
Yeah.
Don't bring your job. Don't bring your home. Don't bring other people's names. Don't bring any of that to the table, because mm-hmm. you don't know what you're going to wake up or open up.
Yes, exactly.
So these are some of the main things I talk about. And this is what I learned by doing things scientifically. There's do's and there's don'ts. And that's definitely a no-no.
Yeah.
So I hope everybody out there hears this. Don't do this.
Yep.
Please don't do this.
What's the scariest thing you've ever encountered in your investigations?
Oh, you had to add investigation. I was going to say my wife leaving me.
Ba-dum-bum.
It's very difficult because, really, I've learned not to be scared of anything.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, I performed and assisted on a few exorcisms. They got a little hairy.
Yeah.
This cross I'm wearing, for instance, now, it's a St. Benedict's cross. I was at the picket getting dinner the other day, and this priest come up and says, that's a nice cross you have. I said, yeah, St. Benedict, I know. So I guess I stepped on his toe when I described
didn't
it.
Didn't mean to.
Yeah. But at any rate, there was an exorcism I was doing, and the demon jumped out of the woman and grabbed the cross and managed to get its claws into the Jesus and ripped it out of the cross.
Oh my gosh.
Now, I gotta admit, this did drain me quite a bit. I wasn't scared, but I was startled because I was knocked off my feet. I have bad knees anyway, so yeah, I can't stay on it too long. And I had to, like, you know, almost crawl over to a chair to sit down for a minute. And the gentleman who was the, we'll call him the chief head, exorcist, he says, "Micah, you're all right." I says, "Yeah, just give me a minute to catch my breath."
Yeah.
And I was right back in there, you know.
Like a prize fighter. You get knocked down, but I get back up again.
Exactly, exactly. It knocked me down, but it didn't take me down, and it wasn't going to take me down.
Mm-hmm.
And my faith keeps me there. So, you know, there wasn't a problem there, and it wasn't scary to me because, you know, a lot of people have tried to scare me, and it takes a lot to scare me.
Yeah.
But I honestly, I mean, I have seen anything you want to see, I've seen.
Okay.
I've sat and talked to apparitions.
Okay.
I mean, 35-minute conversations with an apparition. That is about the coolest thing in the world.
Wow.
The hardest part of that conversation, believe it or not, was keeping myself from asking the question, "Are you an apparition?"
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that because I'm saying, if I ask that and they go, blah, 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 then I'm in trouble,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I didn't want to spoil it. So we just had a conversation. And honestly, what the woman was doing, I had been to the graveyard. It's happened in the graveyard.
Okay.
I went to the graveyard, and I always thank the family for allowing me in this house.
Okay.
And then I go to my car and leave. Well, I met the woman at my car, and she like just walked up to me as if she was going to ask me a question, but I think she was waiting for me to speak first. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm here to see my friends. I always thank them when I come to their house and visit. Now, mind you, I wasn't at where the gravesite was.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't giving that part away because if you go, these were the oldest, put it this way, the original property, the original house, which store it is, but the property ran about 2.5 miles down the road to where this graveyard is now. In the old days, in the 1800s, people buried their dead at the end of their property.
Right.
And I had to research this to find this out, which is why I was there at the graveyard, because that was now the end, what was the end of the property.
Okay.
But they built a graveyard around it.
Okay.
So I had to find them.
Yeah.
But here I was, I knew where they were, and now, so I go visit them all the time.
Hmm.
But it's the oldest tombstones in the graveyard. I mean, everybody else is, you know, from 1900s on up. And here's graves from the 1800s to 1850s, 1860s. You know, it's a big difference. And
yeah,
the tombstones, look, they kind of stand out a little bit. But at any rate, I'm not standing there. So if she was just the average woman out for a walk across a 200-acre farm field, you know, well, you know, maybe it's possible, but you know,
right,
who came up from a road that doesn't exist.
How did she appear to you? Like Claire?
As an old lady.
Okay. But was she all one color, or was she in,
she
was a mist, or
she was a
solid
person.
Okay.
With solid clothes.
Gotcha.
And had an old fashioned wooden cane that she was using to walk with, and she walked like bent forward a little bit.
Hmm.
And she just said she was out for her Sunday stroll.
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, how far do you live? Do you need a ride?" "I just live at the house on the hill." "Well, the house on the hill is the mansion."
Oh my gosh. Man, that's
so there were so many clues. I always tape or film my conversation with the tombstones and the thanking. And I was still carrying my tripod and camera when we met. So she says to me, she says, "What's that you got there, Sonny?" And I said, "Oh, that's my tripod." She goes, "I know what a tripod is. What's that red thing on top?"
Oh.
And I said, "A digital camera." She goes, "Oh, that is what they call them now."
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's like, here's another clue.
Yeah.
They're adding up,
yeah,
you know.
So if somebody wants to hear you speak or that, do you have a site that we can mention?
Yes, theparanormalman.com.
Okay.
It's just look it up. It's right there. And a lot of our investigations are on the site, too.
Okay.
There's an area for asking me to come out and do a lecture.
Okay.
and I love to do them. So.
And do you post where you're going to be?
I haven't yet, but I'm going to start doing
okay.
that.
Okay.
I posted where I've been. I haven't posted where I've been a lot of places. But yes, I'm going to start doing that too.
All right.
I do most of the clerical work. I don't have a secretary, which I did. One day I might. But at the moment, I have to do it all myself.
All right.
Plus work a job. Plus...
We hear that.
Yeah.
We hear that.
I'm single, so I got the home to take care of.
Yes.
You know? So I got all this to do.
Okay.
And it sometimes takes me a while to keep things updated.
Okay.
Actually, I'm about 3 investigations behind posting. Mm-hmm. And about 20 actually analyzing the data.
Yeah.
That's the hard part and the long part.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So, everybody, if you get a chance, go up to your site. Why don't you mention your site again for
Certainly,
everybody?
Certainly, theparanormalman.com.
Okay.
And if you can remember it, the number is 443-326-8568. That's my office number. Leave a message. If you don't get me, I'll call you back.
All right. Well, thanks for stopping by.
I
appreciate
enjoyed
it, and I love your voice. It's
thanks for letting us wrangle you.
Yes.
Not a problem. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Thank
Hope
you
to do it again.
All right. Okay, we're back, and Jen has somebody next door.
Yes, we have 2 amazing ladies with us here at the Paramerican Conference in Gettysburg 2017. We have Jody Nettles from SOS Paranormal, and we have Lita Hawk, who is an author, and she's going to tell us all about her books that she has. So, Jody, we'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about your group, where you're from, and how you got started.
We're from Schuylkill County originally, and I branched out to people from Berks County in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Okay.
And we also have some teammates now coming in from Lancaster also. So we're kind of grabbing them from all over. Okay. So
you're all from the Pennsylvania area?
Pennsylvania area, yeah.
What's the furthest you've ever gone to investigate someplace?
Myself, personally?
Yeah, travel.
I've gone to West Virginia. To Trans-Allegheny, I've gone down there.
Nice.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm taking my team back there. So I went there myself, and I've been wanting to get the team down there. So we're going down there in April. So we're excited.
What kind of evidence did you catch when you were there? Was it
well,
more personal experiences? Or
the place is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a whole lot of... like equipment at the time. Mm-hmm. It was like 10 years ago.
Okay.
So I got my first full body apparition on a photo.
Wow.
At Trans-Allegheny.
Wow,
so that
amazing.
Was like the most phenomenal thing I've ever caught.
That's something I have not experienced yet.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. And my second full bodied apparition was at Eastern State.
Oh, too.
Yeah.
Ooh, we have not been to either one yet, so if you don't know, Joe and I, we have the show, but we haven't had a lot of investigations under our belt. There are ghost hunts under our belt.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always looking for new places to go and investigate.
Okay.
And, you know, those are probably in the top probably 5 locations in the United States. And if you want to go see paranormal, Trans-Allegheny,
number 1.
State.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. And now the Bel Air House, we've been there as a team. And
okay.
It's pretty incredible.
Wow.
Very eerie.
Yeah.
If I can, I don't know how else to explain it because
so
I've been.
Do you think
in some
it has like a darker?
It's what?
A darker feeling to it, like to the
yes.
the presence.
It's yes. Mm. Yeah. I've been to so many places that have some dark entities in them and so forth, but this place kind of envelops you, and
gosh.
It sucks you in, and it's just. We had 2 junior investigators with us, and they normally can handle most types of hauntings. They couldn't. We had to actually leave the building. So it was pretty bad.
What do you do to protect yourself when you are done with an investigation? You don't want anything to follow you home. Do you have any certain things that you do?
We usually say I have a prayer circle before and after.
Okay.
That's always a good thing. A lot of people out there will do investigations and they won't do that.
Right.
And they're like, well, we're always in bad moods the next few days, or we don't feel good the next few days. Well, hello. You know, you're getting that energy. You need to release that energy before you leave.
It's whether you believe or not. Mm-hmm. It's always good to do. I mean, we don't do the sage or anything. You know, we don't do cleansings or anything like that. It's just, we just do our Father who art in heaven. We do a prayer circle, you know, and it makes us feel better. And we also tell the spirits, you are not to come home with us. You're not to touch us. We're only here to talk to you, to get information about what happened here, you know, and we give them, you know, why we're there.
Yeah.
And an explanation that
and
way.
And I think people don't realize that you can tell an entity or a spirit, you're not allowed to follow me, or you're not allowed to wake me up in the middle of the night because you want to tell me something. You know?
Right.
Like, leave me alone. I need my beauty sleep.
Well, unless they want to do the dishes or something like that.
Well, then they can. If they want to dust and clean.
Yeah, go for it.
Vacuum. All you want. You can vacuum. I don't care. But we hold a teen paranormal camp.
Oh,
and
that's cool.
We teach the kids all about the do's and don'ts and rights and wrongs. And most of the stuff that the kids learn is stuff they teach on TV. You know, stuff they learn from Zach Biggins and, you know. And we don't want them to think that's all there is.
Right.
You know, they're learning an hour's worth of investigating that these guys have been on 8 hours of investigating that they cropped down into an hour.
Right. And they have to understand it is a TV show.
It's a TV show. They do embellish and they, you know.
And not everything is you go in and you aggravate the spirits. A lot of times.
Yes.
You may just be doing, do residential?
Yes.
Okay. You may be doing a residence where you don't want to stir that up.
Right.
You're going to make it worse for the people who
are there.
Yeah,
we don't want to do that.
You know?
That's what everybody, we deal with a lot of people that, you know, a lot of different ghost hunting groups or paranormal groups. And there's a few of them that go in there and, we like to just scream and yell. And it's like,
No.
That doesn't
do anything.
You don't do that.
No.
You wouldn't go up to a living person and just start screaming and yelling at them. I mean, just me. But you want to be respectful, and I always say talk to them as if you're just talking to your
best
friend.
What we teach them, too, is to be respectful because they were human.
Yeah.
And how would you want somebody to talk to you?
Right. Yeah.
That's how we want you to talk to them.
Trust me, they have a lot more power than we do, so you don't want to piss them off.
Oh, right. Definitely. And if they do get touched, because we do have a lot of kids that come with gifts, and that's why they come to the camp, because we bring people in that will teach them how to use those gifts. Because you picture a 13-year-old hearing spirits, or a 13-year-old being touched or seeing things and hearing them. That's scary.
Yes.
Sure.
So we're trying to teach them how to learn to use those gifts. And, you know.
And, you know, a young person is going to be afraid if they tell somebody they may be bullied. So, you know, they're going to isolate themselves because they just don't want everybody to think I'm the weird kid who sees spirits.
Right.
Now it's more open. You know, I think people are a little bit more accepting of it because of some of the TV shows that we have. But still, you know, it's a hard time, you know.
Well, there's peer pressure.
Exactly.
And when they come to camp, the first couple hours, you can see the peer pressure that they feel until we say to them, look, you can be yourself here. And this is where you can have your gift and you can show what you can do.
Right.
And we're here to help you do that.
That's awesome.
You know, and
I'm glad you guys are doing that.
Yeah, and by the end of the week,
it means so much to so many people.
It really helps the kids, and they come back.
That's the first I've ever heard of anything like that. So I just think that's an amazing gift that you give kids who maybe not have that outlet to be free and open about what they're experiencing.
Right. We have a girl that comes. This is her fourth year coming back, and she's an empath. And over the years, we've brought people in that can teach her how to deal with being an empath. Because when you walk into a place and you have the feeling of how that person died, imagine a child feeling a death.
Right? Yeah.
That has to be scary as heck.
Oh, yeah.
For a kid to feel, oh, my God, I just had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or I was just bludgeoned to death, or, you know.
Right, yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Even if you're an adult, that would be scary.
Exactly.
Imagine a 12-year-old, you know. So we have a lot of experts that come in different aspects of the paranormal, and they teach the kids all kinds of stuff. So it's really great that we get people that volunteer their time and come in and help the kids. So.
And if somebody wanted to inquire about the camp or about your group, how would they get a hold of you?
I have a Facebook under Jody Lee Nettles, because you can't put SOS Paranormal on Facebook for some reason.
Oh.
And they can go on there.
Okay.
And look up any information, and they can message me that way.
Okay, wonderful. And we also have Lita Hawk, who is an author, and we understand that you have 3 books. Tell
yes.
us all about it. I'm so excited because I'm a writer too, and I love to hear about people's writing. So tell us a little bit about what the premise of your stories are.
Okay, well, I'm writing a series. I have the first 3 books done in the series. It's the Kyrie Carter Supernatural Sleuth series.
Ooh.
So one of my friends says it's kind of like Scooby-Doo without the dog.
Oh, okay.
So it's... It started off as Ghost Hunters fan fiction.
Okay.
I was an avid Ghost Hunters fan for quite a while. And then what prompted me to start writing, besides my paranormal experiences, which I had a few of, I came down with Lyme disease several years ago. And it took them almost a year to diagnose me. So I was very sick for a while. And I needed something while I was laying on the couch, you know, too sick to do much else. Mm-hmm. And I started writing.
Oh, wow.
So I started posting the fan fiction up on some of the fan fiction sites. And I had a lot of people say, this is really good. You should develop this into a novel. So that's how it happened.
Wow, amazing.
So I have 3 books. The first book is called The Newbie.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that deals with Kyrie Carter going on her first paranormal investigation. She wins a contest on the radio and gets to investigate with her celebrity crush, who is modeled after Grant Wilson.
Oh, no.
So she really gets into the investigation. She discovers that she's an empath, and the spirit at the place they're investigating takes an instant dislike to her.
Oh, no.
And
there's
really,
the conflict.
Yeah, really goes after her, gets violent with her, and she finds out there's a family connection there, and that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah.
You have to tease them a little.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Is it all ages, or is this like an 18 and plus story?
I intended it for 18 and up, but I do have a lot of friends who buy them for their teenage children, grandchildren.
Okay. I know that, you know, sometimes somebody will be like, oh, this is a great story, but, you know, sometimes there's adult content in it.
Yeah,
just
I steer away from the adult content.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, Kier does get a love interest in book 2, but, you know, there's no sexual content to it. There's a lot of flirting and tension, but there's no actual.
Okay, good.
So it's team safe.
No smut.
Yeah.
Right, no smut.
We try to keep our show with clean content, so, you know, people of all ages. So if I'm promoting something, I just want to make sure that if somebody buys it, they, you know, don't have their 13-year-old reading. I'm like, Mom, what's this?
Yeah, I have a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old, and the 13-year-old was reading over my shoulder as I was writing. So now he doesn't like the girly stuff, but he liked the paranormal part of it.
Tell about your process of writing. Do you handwrite, or do you write right into the computer?
Yep, I handwrite. I've got a stack of notebooks.
My kind of girl.
About a foot tall, yep. My husband gets mad at me because most women like to buy shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I buy notebooks and pens. And he says, don't you have enough notebooks?
Never. Okay, it's got to be a medium point pen. Don't give me a fine point. I won't.
College ruled.
Right, exactly. There's specific things that I think writers, you have to have a safe space.
Yes.
You have to have a quiet space. Now, I like to listen to music when I write because it inspires me. But I will handwrite all day long.
Yep.
I can do it anywhere. I can do it on my break.
Yep.
And then, because, you know, you get more thought pattern. You don't have that break where you want to stop and put a comma in, then you lose your train of thought.
Yeah.
So, but,
well,
yeah.
What's funny about my process, I've been noticing, I'll write a paragraph, and I don't like some of the sentences in it, so I kind of put an X through it, mm-hmm. and then I rewrite almost the same paragraph and change a little bit. I don't like that either. Cross that off, write almost the same. So if you'd be reading my notebook, you'd think I was crazy.
How long did it take you, start to finish, time-wise, to get your first novel done?
Newbie came about very quickly. Okay. I'd say within 6 months.
Okay.
Then I had to go back and expand it, make it long enough to be a novel length. Okay.
And when you decided to continue the story, it's a series, correct?
Yes.
So three.
Yes.
Did you feel like you weren't done with your character and there was just more to say?
When I finished Newbie, the character who she ends up romantically involved with, they ended in a very bad place with each other and Newbie. My friends that read it said, you can't leave it there. There's something between them. They're meant for each other.
Yeah.
So, okay, what am I going to do for the next one?
Yes.
And it's, now I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, is this all paranormal?
Yes.
Okay, so is her love interest alive?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He is also a ghost hunter.
Okay.
Okay.
And he's kind of, he takes her kind of under his wing. He's trying to teach her the ropes because he is also empathic.
Okay.
And he sees that in her, and she doesn't really want anything to do with it because her dad and her brother are very against the paranormal. They're very strictly religious.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that tension there.
Okay.
How did you feel the first time you had that printed copy in your hand?
It was amazing. The box came in the mail, and I opened it up and said, I cannot believe this is my book. I wrote this. This is my baby.
It's like birthing a child.
It is.
You go through this labor of writing it to produce this beautiful book, baby book, and it's in your hands. Such a great feeling. It's even better when you sell some at the conference.
Yeah.
But if somebody wanted to get a hold of a copy of your book, where would they get it?
It is on Amazon. I do have it on Amazon.
Okay.
It's also on Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
I have Kindle edition, Nook edition, and paperback.
Oh, great.
And I am on Facebook as well, okay. Lita Hawk Author.
Lita Hawk Author?
Yes.
Okay.
Lita, LetaHawk. If anybody out there, please go to the Facebook page, get a copy of her book. I think you'll be quite surprised and happy.
Copy of all the books.
All the books.
Three. Yes.
Sorry,
book four is in the works.
Woo, awesome. That's exciting.
And they'll be able to find that on big announcement when it comes out on Facebook.
Yeah,
that's right.
Definitely.
Right.
So, Jody, could you tell us one more time how to get a hold of SOS Paranormal if anybody needs your help?
Okay. Under Jody Lee Nettles. And I also have a personal one that's under Jody Nettles.
Okay.
And we have SOS Paranormal page that's connected with my main page,
okay. My
Jody Nettles page.
Great.
So you can go under there.
All right. Well, thanks for stopping by.
And go to our page. We'll friend you both. And if anybody wants to
that'd
get a hold
great.
Of you guys.
Thank you.
And
for, thanks for having us.
Yes, we appreciate it. Good luck at the conference.
All right. See ya.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, girls. Okay. And the next, we have Kathy Gash with us.
Now, Kathy is the author of My Life Amidst the Paranormal, and it's published by Haunted Road Media. Welcome, Kathy. Appreciate you stopping by our booth here. Love to hear about your book. It sounds so exciting.
Thank you. It's really great to be here. I've been a paranormal sensitive since I was about 5 years old. And having grown up in an era where if you told people that you saw ghosts,
you
ended up in a straitjacket in the back of a padded cell.
Right.
So I didn't tell anyone that I saw ghosts or anything until I was well into my teens.
Okay.
And by that time, everything that had happened to me over those years caused me to look at life and experiences in a whole different way. And as I got a little older, then I decided, well, maybe I ought to find out what all the media hype was all about, okay. especially with all the television shows and so forth. So I decided to join a paranormal group, learned how to use all of the equipment and what it was supposed to be used for and so on and so forth, just so that I could familiarize myself with it. And also continued to develop my abilities as a sensitive. And I've had, you know, such amazing experiences with various different investigators and so forth. And one of them happened to be Mike Ricksecker. And Mike Ricksecker and I had investigated a few times before. Mike decided to create his own publishing company, which was called Haunted Road Media.
Oh, okay.
Mike, his first book called Encounters with the Paranormal, he asked other people to contribute some of their experiences to that book, so I gave him two of my stories. And after the book was published, it went over so well, and he liked my stories so well that he asked if I would like to make my own book.
Oh, there you go.
Asked me if I could come up with maybe another 13 or so more stories to make a full book, and I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. You know, having had so many experiences for so long, I've got more than 13 stories, but if that's all you want for right now, fine. So within 5 weeks, I came up with another 13 stories, came out with a book, and that is My Life Amidst the Paranormal.
In your process of writing, do you have like a certain ritual for your writing, or do you have a certain way that you write? Like, do you handwrite everything, or do you just put everything right into a computer?
Well, initially, everything that was in my head, I would just sit down at the keyboard and just type it out. Okay. And afterwards, go back and edit it, you know, whether it be for the wordage or punctuation or whatever. And also realizing that I left some things out, you know, because sometimes your memory isn't quite as good until you start reliving it and remembering things. Then suddenly you think, oh, well, okay, maybe I should put that in there too, because that is actually a part of the experience. So, yeah, it's an interesting process, never having done it before. And I'm in the process of doing my second one right now, and I'm finding I'm critiquing myself too much. So
I was thinking that when you said that you went back and edited, I was wondering, and you already answered the question, is do you remember to put stuff in or take stuff out, or do you feel that your first run is, okay, this was my memory, but you answered that question already from it. So.
Yeah. It's always fine, like, I handwrite everything because I get more emotion and flow, whereas I'm on the computer, I stop to correct my punctuation and, you know, capitalization, then I lose my train of thought. So I like really try to free write, then go back and edit. But you know, every writer has a different process. Some listen to music, some have to sequester themselves. You know, writing is tough. It's not easy. I give kudos to anybody who's written a book, because it is not easy process.
No, it is. If I tried to handwrite what I was thinking, I'd never be able to put anything into a book form, because I can't read my own handwriting.
Yeah. So I have that problem also.
I also have to do it on the computer for the most part. It was the only way I can read it.
What surprises you the most about the paranormal? For your experience, your personal experience.
Okay, what surprises me about the paranormal is the, I suppose, the variance of not exactly evidence, but what I would call the varying different opinions of people, the beliefs that people have. You can talk to one person and get their views on the paranormal, what they think it is, walk over 2 feet, talk to somebody else, and they have something entirely different. And of course, in this field, there's no right or wrong.
Exactly.
Because we don't know. So for someone to say, well, this is the right way to do it, or that's the wrong way to do it, or you should be using this equipment and not that equipment. No, everybody's different, because no two people are the same. So your viewpoints and your methods and so forth are different. My abilities as a sensitive, I can walk into a location and almost immediately pick up whether or not it's haunted. And yet there are other people that can walk into a location and it'll take a while before they pick it up.
And we just, with the ladies that we just talked to, we almost had that same discussion where some people will sense things and some people won't. Mm-hmm. And you go in the room and you know that you're open to it, but other people may be more skeptical, maybe, and some people may even go into these places knowing they're not going to see anything. You know, I'm not going to see this. Well, they don't. Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's also been my experience where I've walked into a location with a group of people who are determined to only make a determination whether or not that place is haunted with their equipment.
Yeah.
Rather than relying on what they feel, what they sense.
Exactly.
Because some of these people don't have this ability, so they almost have to rely on the equipment. But if I walk into a location and I don't sense anything, but of course their K2 meter goes off and the first thing they say is, oh, well, the place has got activity.
There could just be a very powerful electrical box.
Somebody could be using their cell phone.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You don't know.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
no. Just think about this and how I want to say this. Coming to this city in particular, which is very well documented, very well widely known that there is hauntings here. There is. How do you not come into this place and be overwhelmed into a city like this with such rich history of the paranormal?
Well, it varies from the time of year that you come here. If you come to Gettysburg in the summertime when it is totally overwhelmed with tourists, anyone with any kind of sensitive abilities, whether it's a full-blown medium, whether it's a psychic medium, whether it's just a small medium like me, you can come into a place where there's lots of people, live people, and it's going to jam your frequencies. So you almost have to go off someplace by yourself in order to pick it up. And then if you come here in the wintertime when there aren't so many people, you can pick it up. And I've told so many people that when it comes to battlefields, my favorite is Antietam. I live not very far away from Antietam.
Where's that at?
Antietam Battlefield, Sharpsburg, Maryland.
Okay.
And even though there's a lot of tourists, especially in the summertime, it isn't quite the same. It's not a touristy town. So when you go to Antietam Battlefield, it has a whole different feel to it.
Oh, okay.
A whole different feel.
That makes total sense. Because we were thinking about it. We were driving down the street. I'm like, I wonder how busy this place is in the summer.
You can't get near this place in the summertime. You can't find a parking space. Hmm. I mean, it's incredible. And it's unfortunate that while this is a very historic town, mainly based because of the battle that took place here, unfortunately, it is now very much a paranormal town. Whereas Sharpsburg, Maryland, they focus on the history, and it has the paranormal on top of it.
Okay. So, in your book, do your story, what part of the paranormal do they pretty much cover? What I mean is it more of the ghost side of it compared to, like, I don't know how
like
to say this.
The process of what you do, or is
no, because I know there's stories that you've grown up with. And maybe it's I'm going on the wrong kind of rabbit hole or something. I don't know, but I was thinking that the style, the style of the book is what I'm trying to get to. Is they're ghost stories, but more love, more mystery, more. That's what I'm trying to. I don't know. Maybe I'm just babbling.
I think I understand what you're referring to. My stories are told, I suppose, from a personal standpoint, that they are just experiences that I've had just on a regular basis. That, in other words, they're not something completely out of the blue and, oh, wow, type of moment like a lot of people have, because I've been experiencing it for so long that it's just second nature to me.
Okay.
But my stories are told from a point of view that this is what I've grown up with. This is what I'm used to. I've never experienced anything so frightening or so horrendous that it's ever put me off.
Okay. Okay.
And the way my publisher referred to my writing is it's very natural.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't tell it from a story point of view. I'm telling it from a memory point
okay,
of view.
Okay, okay. That's sort of what I was trying to figure out. I just couldn't figure out how to ask the question, you know.
I've had a few people to tell me that once they read my stories, they can put themselves right into the story because they've had similar experiences or similar memories, and they said they've laughed at a few, they cried at a few, because I do it all from my head.
Because I've read a few books that when you're reading it, you're thinking, okay, this is totally made up. Come on, come on. You know, you don't get that feeling that the person that is actually writing it knows what they're saying.
That they lived
you,
it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You can hear a story and you can tell, you know, repeat somebody's history of something, but your personal experience, your heart and your heart and soul into your words. Mm-hmm. And a good writer, you will be able to understand that. This is them. Like, when I write my characters, I always put a little bit of myself in there. Because that's the experience that I've had, is I'm able to filter that through my characters. So.
Okay. I never really thought of it that way. Because I'm, you know, the first person in all of these things, I just look at it as being a part of my life, you know, everything that happens to me. I've had a couple of experiences here within the last hour.
Really?
With the person that is sharing a table with me, Cheryl Knobloch. She's a Reiki and an animal intuitive. She also reads auras. And she and I both had an experience there at the table that literally caused both of our legs to just become rubber. It was just an incredible experience. I've discovered that the more I've gotten into the paranormal with other people and sharing my experiences, it has helped me to increase my abilities. It's made me more aware of them. I've learned how to control them and that sort of thing. And I've met some absolutely incredible people along the way. Can't say enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. And, you know, us coming out and doing these kind of shows, we love just to meet new people and hear their experiences and have them come on. If somebody wanted to get your book or get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Well, the book itself is available through Amazon.com. It's available in the soft cover version as well as e-reader.
Oh, great.
And if you would like to have a signed copy, either you can contact Mike Ricksecker through Haunted Road Media, and I'll be happy to do that.
Awesome.
Or try and show up at one of my signings, and I'll be happy to do it that way also.
Do you have a website or a Facebook page that they can find out where you're going to be at?
Well, most of the time, the only events that I do are kind of few and far in between, at least at the moment. I hope to be doing many more of them right now, but Mike will put them on the Haunted Road Media site.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, go to the Haunted Road Media site. And
right. I don't have an actual Facebook page for the paranormal. I just have my own personal page.
Okay.
So I did for a short period of time, but it's not there anymore.
Okay.
So. All right, great. Well, Kathy, we really appreciate you stopping by the booth today and wish you all the best with your book.
Thank you.
And we'll come over and see you at your booth here in a few minutes.
Okay. And I hope to have my next book out by summer. And it will be called Touched by the Paranormal. And it will be stories that have actually touched me both, not only physically, because I have been pushed and shoved and so forth, but also the things that have touched me spiritually, emotionally, things like that through the years. Because it isn't all just about seeing ghosts, but it's your experiences in life that have caused you to be who you are.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Bye. Okay. So we have a big, big, big surprise.
Special guest.
We have Kendra here.
Hi.
And Kendra has been running around here all day long, cracking the whip.
Yes.
Making sure everything is what?
On time.
On time.
Ship shape.
That's what I was like.
Getting those
there goes my
door prizes
brain again.
Out.
Ah. So, how was the day?
Oh, it's been pretty amazing. I was asked to be mistress of ceremonies and didn't realize how much work that actually is. And I'm hoping that I was picked for my planning skills and availability to be on time.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun, but I don't think I've relaxed once.
I haven't seen you stop all day.
No.
You've been running back and forth through the rooms and... I wish I had your energy right now.
I don't know where the energy is, actually. I don't know where it's coming from anymore, because I only had a sub today, and that was it.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and then you're also going to do the investigations tonight. So probably, let's see, I know the one that we're going to be with her is from 11 to what time again?
Oh, you're going till 1:05
okay.
in the morning.
So
yeah, you're
one,
at the orphanage.
So about 1:07, you're going to be like just all over.
Unfortunately,
out.
No. Every time that I do a tour or an investigation in the Jenny Wade House or the orphanage, I actually go home really hyped up because of the experiences and what people have done. It'll probably be an hour after I chew something that I collapse.
So tell us a little bit about what you do here in Gettysburg and how people, if they want to do an investigation, how they would get a hold of you.
Sure. Okay. Well, the investigations go through Ghostly Images, Ghost Tours of Gettysburg.
Okay.
And they have been here for more than 11 years doing tours. And they first started doing tours in the Jenny Wade House, which is the historic home where the only civilian was killed during the 3 days of battle. And then moved on to the orphanage because a much more darker story seemed to draw people to hear about children who'd been abused. And from that, then they realized people wanted to investigate and started setting up investigations for groups. You can investigate the building for 2 or 4 hours, depending on the availability for the guides, because not all guides are able to stay up as late as I do.
Okay.
But if you set that up, say, in November, you don't have to pay for your investigation until October, because we request it 30 days in advance. But the really cool thing is that you will go in with a guide and you will get areas that most people only get to spend a few minutes in because they're on a tour.
Okay.
And you get to actually focus on the areas, such as for you in the orphanage tonight. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to want to go to the pit.
Ooh, that sounds interesting. Yeah. Scary.
It is.
Don't be scared, Joe.
I will. And if you hear any little girls screaming... It's just me.
That's just my brother.
It's just Joe. I will have to pay attention for those screams then.
Have you had anybody just like couldn't handle it and just like ran out?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We've had people on ghost tours that couldn't handle it.
Wow.
They've been pushed up against walls. Men have actually been lifted off their feet.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Wow.
People have been bitten. Scratched. Okay. But the ones that always get that, it's because they're provoking or challenging.
Yeah,
that's a big thing with us is we always tell people, don't provoke.
Right.
You know,
be respectful.
We mentioned it earlier on the show, but people see the TV shows and they think, that's what it's like. It's like, no.
No, these are people and children, and you should talk to them like you talk to your best friend. You know, like, that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
I like to tell people that it's not common sense anymore. Now it's uncommon sense, and not everybody has that.
That's true.
True.
So.
Yeah. True. It's a lost art, really.
Yeah. Well, you do happen to get more activity if you try to focus on things that would bring more happiness. So when you go into the orphanage, instead of asking the children where Miss Rosa is or how were they abused or I'm so sorry, are you missing someone? Start talking about what's your favorite color.
Yeah.
Talk to a kid.
You know, that's a good point. We were down in what's called the Gill House down in Ohio, or up in Ohio from here. And everybody was talking. There's supposed to be a little boy in the house. And everybody was like, come talk to our meter. Here, talk into this box. I'm like, no. So I was like, can I try something? And I got over and I sat down on the floor and brought a ball over and talked like I was talking to a little kid. That's how you have to think that way.
Yeah. Exactly.
And like with your explanation, you don't want to scare the kid. You don't want to scare him.
No.
And if you go up to him and say, "Where's I forget her name already?" That's how my memory is. But where's she at? They're going to be like, "Huh? No."
Yeah.
You know. Right. So talk to him as if you would talk to a person sitting right there.
Exactly. I mean, you don't walk into a room and look at someone who's sitting right there and say, "How did you die?"
Right. Yeah.
Well, they're pretty sure they're not dead. Yeah. They're still alive.
And they'll look at you and go, "Well, wait a minute. How do you know how I died?"
Yeah, really.
What does that look on your face for?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Where's your favorite place to take people into here?
Well, I used to say all the time that it was the orphanage. Mm-hmm. However, this year, the Jenny Wade House has been surprising me. And then walking out on the street or going into the grocery store is another location that you can actually have experiences.
Really?
Gettysburg.
What? Yeah. Yes. It's not just this field over here, this field over. It's
now there's something to be said over focusing about a certain location and making it so everyone goes there. And if you know everyone goes to a place, you're going to go there. So yeah. I could see a spirit who's trying to communicate to someone who knows that everyone goes to Devil's Den. I'm going to try and get to Devil's Den.
That's true.
However, sometimes it's just in the most mundane places when you're shopping for apples and oranges. You don't realize you're at Camp Letterman, one of the last battlefield military hospitals.
Really?
I'm sorry, not Letterman.
Okay.
Did I say Letterman?
We'll edit it out.
I was thinking of Letter Kenny too. So hey, go out there and say hello to the military, okay?
But that is an interesting point. People, they see the town and they think that the spirits are just going to be someplace, but they have more power than us. They can go wherever they want,
right.
You know.
And another thing about the town that most people don't know about, and I always try to discuss it with a lot of paranormal people, because you don't know what place you're going to be in. If you're going to stay at the Farnsworth House, or if you're going to go and be at the hotel at the center of town, the bricks in town, in these old houses and old buildings, came from the brickyard in Gettysburg.
Okay.
And that brickyard mined it from the area, and there's lime and quartz.
Oh, wow.
And we know a watch will work on quartz.
Yeah. Right.
So we know that spirits interact with electronics. So Gettysburg literally is a battery.
Wow.
And most people don't know that.
No, I never thought of that, yeah.
You're staying in your hotel and you start realizing, I'm in a battery.
Yeah, so Joe and I were right behind us at the battlefield last night, right as the sun was setting. Like, we were like, okay, it's 6:30, we got to be out by 7. And both my phones died instantaneously. Yeah. I'm like, Joe, look, look.
Do you know how many arguments we've had to break in the Jenny Wade House?
Really?
Because it's always the husband saying, "I thought you charged the batteries."
Oh, yeah.
And then the wife says, "I did."
That is so interesting. When I had been over there one time, 6 years ago, to this day, it was when I was here, which is very interesting. And I saw, you know, the chain that they have?
Mm-hmm.
Saw the chain moving. Not like this, like I bumped into it, it was moving up and down. I'm like, what the heck? Somebody look at this.
Yeah, it defies logic, right?
Right.
Because when anybody bumps it, a chain is going to move the easiest way.
Yeah.
It's going to sway back and forth. We've actually seen where it looks as though someone has their hand on the chain and they are rattling it up and down.
Yes.
And we've stilled the chains before, and it started again.
Oh, wow.
It was so awesome. I'm like, ooh, somebody, you got to see this. But, yeah, so I'm really excited. We're so interested in this place. There's just so, I mean, just not just the paranormal, I mean, just the history of the United States. And it's just an amazing place. And we're just so thankful that you guys let us come here and come to this conference and do these kind of conferences because, you know, it means something to us.
Oh, and this is the first year for Paramericon here in Gettysburg, and we're hoping that it'll continue on.
Yeah.
So you just have to keep coming back out and having experiences.
Yeah. I do photography also. So when I go to a place, I kind of look around the place and see what's out there. And then especially here, it's like I learn a little bit. Now I got to come back so I can actually go to these places and look. Mm-hmm. And so I'm definitely coming back.
Yeah, anybody who comes out here just for the history, they're not going to learn it all in just one short day. We have a lot of historians. It's interesting. I love historians. Most people say, if you're on a ghost tour, you don't want a historian. Uh-huh. No, because the historians will actually confirm as I'm telling the history, they're shaking their head at me. They're nodding. They're saying, you're telling the truth. I believe your story.
Yes.
And that's the important part, is to know your history so that your ghost story rings true. Because when you don't know it, it just falls false. And it could be the most amazing story in the world, but you don't know the history, so how can you connect it? How can people believe you?
Exactly, exactly.
And that's part of the fun, is finding out, okay, who is haunting and why? I'm a people person, mm-hmm. I'm an observer, and I love to do research. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to know who lived here, when did they live here, what were the clothes,
Exactly.
This town is amazing, that's all I got to say. And you're amazing too, Kendra. I appreciate all that you've done today for us.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're looking forward to investigating tonight. And tell us again, if anybody wants to get a hold of you or to do a tour, how they would do that.
Sure. If you want to set up a private investigation or even a private tour of private tour, 10 or more investigation, you can do up to 10 people. Just find us online, GettysburgGroupReservations.com. And you'll be able to be put in touch with us. We'll set that up for you. Or if you just want to come to town and go on a ghost tour, you do go to Ghostly Images at 777 Baltimore Street and pop in. And we have a multitude of ghost tours, from ghost buses to encounters where the guide is the ghost who's come back to get you.
Oh, now that would be fun.
Yeah, I got to do that.
Oh, yeah. Can you go into the orphanage with Miss Rosa Carmichael?
Sure.
All right.
I am afraid of her.
She might lock you up, but that'll be fun.
Okay, well, thank you. And once again, thanks for letting us come down here.
We appreciate everything.
We're definitely coming
back.
This is fun. And we're going to grow this to where, instead of having two rooms, we may just take over the whole hotel.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. All floors, right?
Yep, that's right.
There we go.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
All right. So.
I love meeting new people.
Yeah.
And just hearing their stories and. I'm tired, Joe. How about you?
Yeah. It's been a long day. I know this show is obviously going to be edited so that we can put it all together, but we met some great people today.
Yeah. Amazing people.
Amazing. They were amazing and awesome.
Yeah.
And we got the chance. We're going to go do a paranormal investigation up at the
orphanage
tonight.
Yes.
And
so excited about that.
So we want to thank everybody for tuning in, and check out us on Facebook. We're going to post a bunch of pictures and all that kind of fun stuff. But just thanks for tuning in. And we will talk to you
next
week.
We'll be back. Don't miss us.
Bye-bye.
My head. This is the truth.